Welcome to Burning the Ships, and today I am very excited. I've got the most important person in my life, my wife, Miss Katie Seward. How you doing?
I'm good.
You nervous?
Yes.
Yeah. Katie absolutely hates this type of stuff. I've been begging her for 2 years to hop on, but finally convinced her. And I've got a bunch of questions in my head. She was asking me this morning what I was gonna ask her, and I said the beauty of the show is I usually don't know until I get going, so I couldn't prep her for anything. But before we get into the conversation, I am going to give y'all JJ's joke of the week. So he's got a pretty decent one this week. And this is fitting because Katie's a teacher, so this is good timing on this. Why did the kid bring a ladder to school? Because he wanted to go to high school. And that's JJ's joke of the week. He told us a couple good ones the other day in the car that I didn't write down, so I got to go back to him and get those for future episodes. Katie Seward, she has been, y'all have heard me for a couple years now talking all about this mindset of burning the ships. And for me, that meant burning the ships on my former career and going all in on business. Well, I'm just half of that equation, and the other half is right here beside me, maybe even more than half. But so we're going to talk about like a couple of things, her mindset through all of that, and you know, before, leading up to, during, once I actually left the job, and then now that we're rolling with the business, and how that has been from her perspective. I share on this podcast a lot my perspective, right? That's all I have to share most of the time because it's just me talking or my guest. But I also share, you know, a lot of the conversations that Katie and I had, a lot of the things we had to figure out before we made this decision. But today I'm excited to let y'all hear some of that from her own words or in her own words. So with that, we'll start off with, let's introduce yourself to the folks. So what you do, where you're from and all that stuff, and you can take it wherever you want. So.
So I grew up in Colonial Heights, Virginia, which is about an hour and a half, from where we live in Surrey, about an hour. That's where my family's from. It's where I graduated from, spent all my school years there. And then met Jason on a blind date, through some mutual friends. Yeah. And then it just took off from there.
Yeah.
So it's been going ever since.
A funny story. When Katie and I met, a friend of mine, real good friend of mine, and I'm gonna leave names out of this just because I don't want to embarrass anybody, but he set Katie and I up on this blind date. We went to a basketball game, and then we're gonna meet y'all at Buffalo Wild Wings that night. Never met Katie, never even had a conversation with her. Leading up to us meeting, I had never even seen you. Like, I didn't have Facebook at the time. This was like 2006, maybe, when we meet. 2007.
Yeah.
But I may have had Facebook, but I had no way to look you up or find anything about you. So it was a true blind date. Going into that date, my friend and I came up with a plan to get out of it if I wasn't into it, right? Or if I wasn't into you or something like that. It just wasn't going well. The plan was I was going to give him some kind of signal, like a tip of the hat or something to let him know that let's implement the plan. And the plan was he was going to say that we had to go. He was going to pretend to take a call. So step away, come back and say that we have to go because my brother was arrested and we got to go bail him out. That was the plan. We get on the blind date. Do you remember all this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're on the blind date immediately. When I saw her, I was like, okay, well, that box is checked. So she's very beautiful. And then we started vibing right away. Like we were having a good time, good conversation. And probably 30 minutes later, my friend hops up to take a phone call. And I'm thinking the whole time, like, man, I hope I didn't give him the wrong sign. He comes back, whispers in my ear and says, hey, my brother, he really was arrested. I just got a call. We've got to go pick him up. I was like, I didn't give you the sign. And you're sitting right there beside me. He's like, no, for real. It's real. And I still didn't believe him. I thought had mistaken a bad sign. But nonetheless, his brother actually got arrested that night, which was a random, rare thing. Like, it was just a weird coincidence. But we had to leave, and that was our first time meeting. So what do you remember about that night?
I mean, I remember a lot of what you said. Yeah. I had said something similar to my friend that...
Oh, y'all had a plan, too.
We had a plan, too.
And that
I was, you know, if I didn't like how things were going, I was going to... I think it was like 2 straws in my drink or something like that, you know. So she would get...
I never knew this.
Yep. So that I would be like, hey, I'm not into this. Like, let's get, you know, find a way to get out of it. So, but thankfully, that was not the case.
Yep.
And... we've been together ever since.
Yep. So that's kind of how things started. And it's been, that was 07. So what, we're 18 years into it since then, a little over 18. We just celebrated our 16th anniversary. And we always, I remember when we got married, talking about, like, we got married Memorial Day weekend. Mm-hmm. And that the intent there was, we did it because that would always give us a long weekend around our anniversary to go do something, to get away. And then we had JJ, who was born June 1st, which always, his birthday party always falls around Memorial Day weekend. So we still try to get away for a couple nights on our anniversary and have a good time with that. But you met me, and we dated for a few years, got married, and ultimately that landed you with me in Surrey. But you always had a passion for children, right? Mm-hmm. And like, I think, you know, you told me, like, back to when you were a child, your dream was to be a teacher, mm-hmm. right? And, so now that dream has, you know, for many years, you've been living that dream. Talk about that. Why, what about your childhood made you have that mindset of, I want to help little kids? And you were very specific. You wanted to teach little children. So what was it?
I had phenomenal teachers when I was in elementary school. Always, they were very caring. I was never a very strong student, but they were always there to help me, give any extra tutoring. I had to have a tutor all the way through math. So like I said, it was very difficult for me in school, but the teachers, they never gave up on me. They made sure I had everything I needed, especially in elementary school. And I just love being able to make a difference like that in the children that I teach.
Right. And so that kind of, I mean, ever since I've known you, I mean, you were working in a preschool, and then you kind of advanced up, you know, within that organization of the school you worked with. And then, I mean, hell, you went back to college to finish your degree to become a teacher and graduated in 2015, mm-hmm. right? So, I mean, at that point, you're well into adulthood. Now, you had been teaching with a provisional up to that, or you weren't, you were doing something with
preschool.
The preschool.
Oh, okay, preschool.
Gotcha. But I remember you graduated just a couple months after we moved into our new house, the house we're in now. Mm-hmm. And then it since then, it's been game on. 10 years of teaching in both public and private schools. So now that you've done it for that long, both preschool and in the school systems, has the dream been all that you had expected or hoped for as far as dealing with the children and having the impact?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. It's been phenomenal. I've been very lucky that over the last 10 years, I've had very supportive families. The kids have been great. You know, they have this thing where they think they're independent and they want to be independent, but yet they still want hugs from you and tell you that they love you and they want to walk with you when you go places and do things to help you out. So they have that, like, really sweetness about them, especially at the grade level that I teach, which is second. And they're just a lot of fun. They're so funny. The stories they come up with crack me up.
Well, you've transitioned, like, in the last few years, I guess since COVID, but you were in the public school system. We made, as a family, made some decisions to, during all the shutdowns or lockdowns or whatever. But, before moving over to the private school where you're teaching now, and you're teaching second grade, mm-hmm. right? before that, you were in special education. So that's a whole different ballgame. So do you care to talk about that or like that experience? What kind of perspective did that give you both as a teacher, a parent, just all in all, just dealing with kids with disabilities?
So I had, children with varying disabilities. My first couple of years, I was an inclusion special education teacher, which meant that I worked in a general education classroom with students who typically had, learning disabilities, some emotional disabilities. And so it was a lot of like pull out where I would pull them into the classroom with me and we work on specific goals. I moved into a self-contained classroom, which meant that the kids stayed with me the entire time. And those kids, their disabilities were, with autism, intellectual disabilities. And so working in all those different levels kind of showed me that all kids are different. They're unique, but they each have different levels of needs in the classroom, not just academic needs, but levels of emotional needs that need to be met. Maybe they weren't getting that at home, so they'd come into the classroom and they need, extra hugs or love. I even had kids that I had to give snacks to and shoes to and things like that because their home life, was very difficult.
Right.
So there was all of that, was part of teaching. But as a mom, it has made me understand Emma and JJ's needs, that they're different. They each need different things from me as a mom. But, JJ and Emma both have, ADHD. And so they're, each need something different from you and I as parents. When it comes to their emotional needs, their academic levels, Emma and JJ are very different when it comes to what they need academically. And so we have to kind of meet them where they are, but it gives me a lot of patience and understanding, more than I probably would have had before, because it just makes you realize that the support that they need, from us as parents is just on a level that even my students need it. So it kind of helps me see through their eyes that, hey, I understand that how you feel. I've been with children that also feel the same way. And now I know how to kind of meet their needs and at home. So,
yeah. And it's, like a fringe benefit of that and your understanding of that is me. Like you're managing me as well. Like, because I don't know, I'm not educated on any of the things that not just our children, but all children deal with. Like, you see a kid getting super upset at something, right? That seems like, it's not a big deal. You lost a video game and they're throwing, JJ throwing a fit or throwing something across the room. But I have to remind myself that I was that exact same way. And that was shit. And you teaching me how to, and I don't always do a great job of it, neither one of us. I mean, we always, have our slips, but for the most part, teaching me that like their brains are developing in their own unique way. Every child is not a cookie cutter child, right? It's not black and white. It's a lot of gray that a lot of folks don't understand. You just have to manage through it and meet them where they are and on their level. And so I've gotten an education just by having you as a wife who's very educated in that stuff, and then having two challenging children, JJ especially. Mm-hmm. But and then, like I said, you moved over to the private school and our kids, we moved them into that school. It's a local school here where we live. And that's been different. You've been dealing with second graders, and that's, I would imagine you see the same, not same disabilities, but you're seeing the same principles apply to a second grader without major disabilities. They still have emotions. They have things like that. So a lot of the training ground of working in special needs has probably made you a better second grade teacher, I would think. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So when it comes to, like, you've made it very clear over the years, you you don't have a desire to teach like high schoolers and middle schoolers. So what is it about the little ones that really keeps you attracted to that age group and wanting to help them and development and all that?
Well, they're at the age where they still are really interested in learning. They want to be there. You know, they come in and they're excited to see you and they give you a hug. And they want to be a part of the classroom family, which is what I try to create in my classroom, is we create a family. And they want to be a part of those things. And we don't necessarily have the attitude and the pushback on education,
right,
that you start seeing as you get into middle school and high school. And even some of your upper elementary school, you are still starting to push back a little bit more, but they just have this sweetness about them that is just really humbling to be around. And you are teaching them a lot of emotional and social things. You know, you're teaching them how to handle those big emotions. And when they have those big emotions, I have to remember that even as an adult, we struggle with handling big emotions. And here it is, I have a 7-8-year-old who doesn't understand and is struggling with the big emotion. And so being able to help them through that and teach them how to manage those emotions is really big for me, because I've always struggled with that.
Yeah. So. Well, I think it's, you know, you get enough of that 13-year-old with, we got one at the house. I'm surprised that doesn't want to motivate you to go teach others at that age, because she is definitely, I mean, Emma's sweet as can be. She's got a heart of gold, but just like many preteen, or she's a teenager now, 13, but they go through a lot of stuff, mm-hmm, and they express it in ways and they're learning, but yeah, it's interesting. I talk a lot about, well, let me be very clear. Katie, how many podcast episodes have you listened to of ours?
I've been like bits and pieces of them. Sorry.
Well, I joke with her all the time. She gets to hear me talk nonstop. So sitting down for an hour listening to a podcast episode is not on her list of to-dos throughout a day. But one thing I talk about a lot on the podcast is just having passion. Like this whole brand of like burning the ships is going all in on something you're passionate about. You're very passionate about your family, your kids, and all that. But you, so I left my former career in 2022. So call it 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago. Prior to that, like 5-6 years leading up to that, I basically year after year was begging you to stay at home, let's raise the kids and stuff like that. You have always had this mentality of, you know, maybe that'll change in the years to come. I don't know. But this mentality of, I appreciate getting paid to do what I do, but I would do it for free almost. Like you would never accept me saying to you, like, we are good financially. Stay at home. Like let's travel, do all that, because you're passionate about what you do. And I try to articulate that to folks, like that's a good example of someone truly loving and living what they're passionate about. It doesn't matter the money or anything like that. So what are your thoughts around that? Like, I mean, what motivates you? Because I get to hear all the, sometimes the venting and stuff like that that goes along with being a teacher, but what keeps you coming back year after year?
Yeah, I mean, it is, there's a lot of parts to teaching and education that can be frustrating, especially when you have, you know, 17 kids in one class and they're all different and they all need different things from you, or, you know, the coworkers and things like that in a school environment. So there's a lot of parts to being a teacher, you know, but I am very lucky that I work in a school with supportive families. That's a big piece of it. The main administrator that I work with is phenomenal, and he's very supportive, and I have supportive coworkers, and we have this, like, we're our own little family there, you know, but the kids are phenomenal. They're sweet and they're loving, and they enjoy being in the class. And they're the reason why I keep coming back. And then you see the growth that these kids make. Like, we might have the student come in on a first grade, you know, reading level, but by the end of second grade, they're, you know, at a third grade reading level going into third grade, which is where they're supposed to be, or they're even higher than that. So you see the growth that these kids make throughout the school year. And that's what gives me my purpose for teaching, is the growth that they make in all areas.
Yeah. It's got to be rewarding now, because you've been doing it long enough now where you're seeing kids that you taught when they were little now graduating and stuff like that. Or yeah, I would imagine you're seeing some of that, right? Because you...
Through the public school,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah.
When I started.
Right. So you've been at your current school 5 years, 4 years?
Going in, my upcoming school year will be 5 years.
So those kids, your first set of kids are what, 13, you know, kind of Emma's age?
They're going into sixth grade this
year. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. So that I always love seeing, like, when I'm in and around the school, seeing the high schoolers come back and, like, hug on their, you know, yeah, second grade teacher and stuff like that. And it's cool for me. I just played and... a fundraiser, a golf tournament for where I went to high school, and a lot of the same faces are still there. A lot of the same people that taught me, which, you know, back then I was a nuisance to them, and now it's cool to see them and see that they haven't they didn't hate me enough to at least not give me a hug. So so now let's, you know, you're still teaching, you love it, you're out for the summer now, and you know, for you, you don't sit idle very long. You always keep your plate full. We were joking this morning talking about how, like, you, and I'm similar, I've gotten better about it, but you don't have, like, you have a tough time saying no when somebody asks you something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so for that reason, you get involved with a lot of stuff, and, you know, probably more than you care to be involved with, but you are just a... like, to your core, a giver, a doer, a server, all those things, and you're very nurturing and all of that. So, like, where does that come from? Is it more of that desire you have as a teacher just to have an influence and help people, or more of a just don't want to let anybody down and say no?
I think it's a little both. Mm-hmm. I do like to be able to, you know, influence, you know, how kids are in regards to, you know, how they see themselves as a person. I want to be a good role model for them, and show them that giving back is a great thing, especially to your community. And just knowing that I may have helped them, you know, shape how the decisions that they make, you know, maybe they were getting ready to make some bad decisions, and I can talk to them and give them some of my life experiences, and just being that role model for them, which I think is really important. They need to see people in their lives who care about them and love them and support them in whatever choice that they make.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And you do say no sometimes, but that is to your husband, and you know, so I'll leave it there. But you, like I said, we're into the summer now. You're doing swim team. You're coaching both of our kids and at our local swim club. And you love that. You were a swimmer yourself, back in the day. You swam competitively, as your mom likes to remind everybody. But so, like, we as a family, we just live a very active lifestyle, both physically active. Like, we're all on the go. We're doing stuff physically all the time, but we just very rarely will you find us just sitting around, right? Early in the morning, late in the evenings. But outside of that, like, we got to go. If we have like, you and I get excited to have a clean slate on a weekend where we don't have anything. But the first thing we're doing Saturday morning is figuring out, all right, we don't have anything to do. Let's find something. Let's go to the movies. Let's go for a hike. Let's do that. So, and I think, yeah, this kind of goes into what has, in my opinion, made our marriage so strong over the years, is we are aligned with that, with kind of how, not, you know, I'm probably a little more restless than you when it comes to just always having to go. But at the same time, we want to raise our kids to be active, you know, active thinkers, active doers, just be active. What are some, like, things that you see in our kids now as they're getting older that the influence that we're having on them, you kind of see it at playing out. What are some things you see?
Well, Emma is very passionate right now about swimming. Mm-hmm. She wants to be at She wants to be at all the practices. She doesn't want to miss anything. She's always asking what she can do to get better. So I love seeing that part of her swimming. And even in her schoolwork, you know, she wants to do better. She's asking for help, which she didn't used to do a lot of. She is striving more for that excellence in everything that she's doing. So she's starting to mature in that way. We're giving her more independence. It's like right now she's watching her 9-year-old brother for us so that, you know, dad and I can do this podcast. And
that's going to lead to another topic around anxiety. Get right there. You're feeling it right.
And so she is really wanting to be independent, and that's important for us as parents to make sure that she feels that she is capable.
Yeah.
And that's the big piece for teenagers nowadays, is not feeling like they're babied and just being independent and knowing they are responsible. And we have to have that trust in her. She's got to know that we trust her to make the right choices.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of that, and I'll again talk about it a lot on here, but is just putting them in situations where it's probably a good chance they're going to fail and they're going to have some adversity. And it's important for us, and you and I are on the same page with this. It's hard, but to sit back and allow it to happen.
Right.
Right. Talk about right now, you know, you're here at my office. We're 30 minutes away from the house, and they are there at the house by themselves. They're perfectly fine. Like, they're right. Perfectly capable. But we got to let them do it. Like, you know, we got to let them be there and let them fight and argue and tear stuff up, drop stuff, break stuff. And I know as I'm saying it, you're getting anxious about what's going on, but that's very important. So we want to give both of our kids that independence, you know, give them chores and let them, you know, fail at whatever it is, because that's how they build resilience and all that stuff. So I've used the word anxious, and that has been a constant word, like big part of your life for many years, right? Anxiety. And I did ask you before we recorded if you were okay talking about it. But when I talk about burning the ships, a lot of times it has nothing to do with leading a career or something like that. A lot of times it's shifting mindset, right? Like, you burn the ships on a former mindset or way that you interacted with the world and stuff like that, and you really work hard to change it and do something different. So you have been really, since the day we met, on a pretty long journey, a very healthy journey, but a long journey of dealing with your own anxiety. So how far does that go back with you?
As long as I can remember, since I was a child.
Mm-hmm. And we're not talking about just getting, like, you know, nervous when a test is coming up or a competition. It there's been points in your life where it's borderline crippling anxiety, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, and I think a lot of folks listening, this will probably be the part of this interview that will have the most impact, in my opinion, but a lot of folks listening deal with this. And I don't know why. Fortunately, I never have. I've never had to. I mean, I'll get nervous about things or stress, but true anxiety, what I've seen you deal with, I can't be empathetic to it, because I've never dealt with it. Mm-hmm. Other than dealing with you or dealing with you dealing with it. So describe, like, at its worst, if you can articulate it, like, put that into words, you know?
And yeah, and anxiety is, it can be hard to articulate it, because the way you're feeling, you know, is sometimes can be hard to tell someone who doesn't quite understand what anxiety actually is. But for me, it is like worst case scenarios. And although more than likely those worst case scenarios are not going to happen, it is, to me, absolutely something's going to go wrong. You know, I could be driving down the road and you are at home with our kids, and to me, I'm sitting here thinking about every worst thing that could happen while I'm gone. If I'm not with my children, what's going to happen to them? This is what's going to happen to them. And I actually play it out in my brain, and I would get so upset and so anxious that I would have difficulties breathing. Or if I'm, you know, in a shopping mall and, you know, I see, you know, something happening, you know, around me, I'll start getting very anxious and I'll be looking over my shoulder. I'll think that someone's following me, or I'll just have these anxious thoughts that I'm like, I'm in trouble. I got to get away. And so I start, you know, lashing out, and I'll get very angry. I'll get very irritated. And there are times I'll pick things, I bite my nails when I get very anxious. So there's a lot of pieces that kind of go into that anxiety. But for me, it was always worst case scenario, where it could be like, if you told me you're supposed to be home at 11 o'clock and it's 11:02 and you haven't walked in the door yet, I'm starting to freak out because I'm like, something's happened. He's not here. What's wrong? And I would be calling him, texting him, like, where is he? Why aren't you home? Sure. And that was a big piece to get you to understand that when I am calling you at 11:02, it's not because I'm crazy, you know, and I'm you know, and I'm not like, you know, like, oh my gosh, where are you? But it's a genuine fear that something has happened to you,
yeah,
or that something's going to happen to you because you're not where you said you're supposed to be.
Right.
And that was a big piece that you had to try to understand, was it wasn't me trying to control every aspect of your life. It was a genuine fear something was wrong. And then my brain would go haywire. I'd get sweaty. I'd sometimes have difficulty breathing, you know, shaky, that yeah. kind of stuff. So,
and I completely misinterpreted it early on in our relationship. I mean, I interpreted it as, you didn't trust me. So you had like trust right. issues, and it couldn't be further from the truth. Like, you know, I mean, like early on, as we were building a relationship, it may have been a little bit of that leading to some anxiety, but as we got further along, I realized, like, no, it's not that at all. And you did the greatest thing that you did early in our marriage was you communicated very well with me, like, what you were actually feeling, and you were very open. So that helped me transition from, oh, she doesn't trust me, to, oh, she's dealing with stuff that I can't understand. I don't understand it, but I've got to be sensitive to it. And if like me, I just kind of float with the wind. 11 o'clock could mean 11:30 to me. And you use that example, but I've got to realize that 11 o'clock means 11 o'clock to you, right? And you've done better. Like, you're not at, you're a completely different person now, but early on, if I said I was going to be there at 11 o'clock and I saw that it might be 11:02, I know I've got to call or text you. Or a great, one of the early examples, I don't know, for sure you remember this, because this was like one of the first times I saw your anxiety in full display. We were dating. I think you had stayed over at my house. I don't think we were living together yet, but I got up the next morning to go hunting. And so I got up before light and you were still in bed and I went hunting. When I hunt, typically I don't mess with my phone. I have it on silent. I don't want animals to hear it. And probably 2 hours go by, I didn't even peek at my phone, and I pick it up and I've got 38 missed calls and a million texts, because you knew I was hunting, but you were just trying to communicate with me. And as soon as I didn't answer that first text, and you explained it later, but your brain went to, he fell out of a tree. He's paralyzed. I'm missing all this, you know. So you had created this narrative in your head that I was injured, when really I just wasn't even looking at my phone. So that was my first taste of, like, when you finally explained, like, this is what I was thinking. For 2 hours, mm-hmm. I thought you were dead. And, like, that's where your brain went. So me understanding that, because of you explaining it so well early on, has helped me grow alongside you as you've gone through it. So now, all these years later, now do you care to talk about some strategies that, like, early on that you've continued to this day? Because it rarely rears its head now. Like you have it so, and I'm sure you deal with it internally, but it rarely manifests itself in, like, where you're freaking out or losing control or something like that. So what strategies have you used over the years to get from there to here?
Well, one is I recognized it, and I recognized that it was starting to become not only a problem for me, health-wise, like emotionally and physically, but that it was taking a toll on, like, you, as, you know, my boyfriend at the time. And so what I did is I first went and found a therapist, someone that I could talk to help me work through those things. I actually got on some, you know, medicine, which I've taken off and on over the years, you know, depending on how things are going. And through the therapy sessions, they taught me different things that I could do to basically get out of, like, the downward spiral of having a thought and then just carrying on with it. And so they taught me, you know, breathing techniques that I could use to calm myself down, ways to get out of that thinking process. A lot of it is, if I go down the road of, like, you're not answering your phone, maybe you're with Emma and JJ and you're not answering your phone, and I start panicking a little bit and I'm like, something's wrong, they're not answering, I will just tell myself, I'm like, Katie, stop yourself, really think about it. And I will just tell myself, okay, it's actually fine. I'm overthinking it. I'm being irrational. I know I'm being irrational. So I tell myself how I know I'm acting. And that typically calms me down and kind of gets me out of that way of thinking. Deep, really the deep breathing helps a lot. Or I might think, I know it sounds weird, but think of something happy. You know, like, I'll try to get myself out of that thinking by thinking of something else happy. You know, so those things do really help. But the therapist, I didn't get there on my own. I had to have help from someone, because I knew I wasn't going to get there on my own. But you have to realize that, accept that you have a problem, and then go and find somebody that can help you with it.
I think that's the key variable. A lot of folks in this is they might realize that something's going on, but the unwillingness, and maybe it's ego, maybe it's pride of not wanting to admit that you've got some, you know, everybody's got various levels of issues. Like, there's a spectrum of issues you can have, but that's one that was tearing you up on the inside. And it's kind of a silent thing, because nobody else, it doesn't matter. I got to see it a lot, you know, because I was with you all the time. So I would see it, but to recognize it and say, this is going in the wrong direction, because it was tough early on for me, from the standpoint of I didn't know how to deal with it. And often my response to you was, "What? It's not a big deal. Just get over it. You're overthinking it. Why are you overthinking it?" Well, how helpful was that? None.
Oh, no, I would have punched your pung sucker.
Right. So I learned very quickly that was not effective on my end. And now, I mean, like I said, it's very rare that your anxiety comes up to where we have to, you know, where I have to use a strategy to deal with it, meaning just shut my mouth and let you vent or let you go through it or whatever. But when it does, I now know that, okay, I recognized what it is. I also know that you recognize it. And usually now, much less than it used to be, but time, just letting it simmer, and it just happens. It goes away, right? And, you know, a good example of where you've gotten from, you know, compared to where you were, Emma and I hop on a plane tomorrow morning out of Richmond, flying to Las Vegas, staying a night in Las Vegas, driving up to Utah for a daddy-daughter's trip in the mountains. And we're going to be gone through Sunday. So a several night trip across the country away from you. That would have not, that 10 years ago, absolutely not, wouldn't even been on the radar.
Right.
You not only said, that's awesome, go do it, but you've supported it. You've helped Emma, because she's got some anxiety. You've helped her be comfortable with everything we're doing. And while I know you still have some anxiety around it, what this is a real-time, real-life example of, I'm watching you use your strategies to deal with it, staying positive, getting Emma excited about it, helping us find stuff in Vegas to do for kids and stuff like that. So if there's no bigger testament of how far you've come than that. So, and I think it's God, there's so many, like, there's people out there that have anxiety on levels far worse than you did and far not as bad as you did. But so it is a spectrum. But the key here is, like you said, recognizing not only what it's doing to yourself, but what it could potentially do to relationships around you, your children, stuff like that. And then finding the resources to deal with it.
Right.
And you continue to do that to this day. So I think that's a great thing. So one thing that a couple of years ago that had to test your anxiety was this idea of me wanting to leave the career that had built everything we have and go pursue a business that I was building on the side. From a supporting wife standpoint, all I saw was you saying, I trust you, honey. I trust you. I trust you. I trust you. But let's get real. Like, you had to be dealing with some anxiety leading up to that. Knowing how I am, I'm the kind, I'm a risk taker and I just go. So talk me through what you were dealing with, what helped you get through those times before I actually left the job, because we were talking about it a lot, but what helped you get there?
I think the biggest piece of it was that you were able to explain to me from a financial point of view that we were going to be okay. So my biggest thing with you getting ready to leave your job was I wanted to make sure that the kids were still going to be able to do everything that they were doing. They could still go to the school, you know, because they go to a private school, so we're going to have to pay for that. And I wanted to make sure that our kids were still going to be okay. They were still going to be able to have the house that they lived in and the things that they wanted and the sports that they played, and that we could still give them the type of life that they have been used to. And so when you were able to financially explain to me how that was going to happen and you laid it out and it made total sense to me, that was kind of the final piece that let me see that, okay, this is going to be fine. This is going to work. And the other thing you did say, you said, if we haven't gotten to this point in the business by this many years, I'll go find a different job. And with your skill set that you had from being with Farm Bureau, we knew that you could find a job easily if need be, and we were going to be okay financially. That was the biggest thing for me, because, you know, JJ and Emma are obviously our world. They're the most important people in our world. And so them being taken care of was the most important thing to me. I could give up my Lily addiction for a little bit if that's what we needed to do, you know, for you to take care of business.
I'm glad you brought that up.
But they were my most important thing.
I'm glad you brought the Lily addiction, because I remember the conversation of, like, you saying, I only have one requirement, and it was around what you just said, that our standard, not us, not you and I, but our kids' standard of living, we don't have to move them from the house that they love. We don't have to pull them out of cheer or baseball because we can't afford a registration or something like that. But you said, outside of that, you know, we'll compromise whatever we need to compromise financially to build to where we need to be, as long as it's not impacting the kids. And part of what you said is, like, if I have to dial back and now I can only buy a new purse every 3 years, or I don't have to buy Lily all the time, I'll do that. Well, since that time, since leaving, I think your closet has probably tripled in nice Lily outfits, because that is an addiction that you have not gotten under control. But it looks very good on you. So, but yeah, there was that. And I think for you and I both, and I don't know, I'm sure we talked about it, but this was always kind of in the back of my mind, and I'm sure yours too. Yes, we didn't want to compromise our kids' childhood, right? But you and I came from not a lot of money, right? We were raised, you know, in, like, we both had loving families, but money was not a big center of it, right? It wasn't, like, we didn't have a lot of things, right? We had enough, and we are both comfortable. If shit hits the fan, we can go back to that, and we know we're okay living like that, right? And we can be resourceful enough with that to still give our kids the, because did you lack any experiences growing up?
Absolutely not.
I didn't either. My mom was poor as dirt and my dad wasn't around. I didn't lack anything. I was able to play. My mom figured it out. And you and I know that we're resourceful enough
right.
to figure things out to give our kids what we think they need and want,
right?
Right? So I think that for me, that was the biggest part of it. It's just knowing how resourceful you and I both are. And like, I tell people this all the time, and Bill would say the same thing. Neither one of us would have been able to make that final leap without the support of you and Elena, right? And I remember, and you, I've talked about this a million times, and you probably don't even remember it, but leading up, when I made up my mind, I was like, we went to the Nashville trip. Remember this? So we went there. I came back, gung-ho, I'm leaving the job. We're good. I can do it. I put together a plan. I told you the plan. You were good with it, but you were kind of like, I trust you, honey. You just kept saying that. I trust you. I trust you. And I believed that, but I needed to like get deeper with you. Like I needed to know, because I know your history with anxiety. I didn't want to think that you were having this internal battle. Then I leave my job and then it blows up on us, right? So I remember in bed one night, I kind of said, look, I need to really know where you're at. And you kind of stopped me or whatever the situation was, but you said, and this is exactly how you said it, but me and the kids don't give a shit how much money you make. Like we want us to be happy. We want you here and things like that. And that was it. Like it was literally within a week, I had my resignation letter done and turned in because of that support. So I don't know if I've shared how profound that was in my decision making at that time with you. I've shared it on this podcast a lot, which you clearly don't listen to. But since then, so I pulled the trigger. I did it. Mm-hmm. I left. And now we're 2.5 years into it. What has been, everybody knows my experience. I share it publicly with everything. What's been your experience since that time? As far as not, you know, financially, we're fine. We actually kind of exceeded or, you know, beat the timeline on getting back to where we needed to financially with the business. So all that aside, how has it been for our relationship, me being more present, things like that, from your perspective, how has it been?
I mean, you've been a lot happier. You are not as stressed. You'd come home from, you know, your previous job and it would be, you know, you'd be getting phone calls at 9 o'clock at night because someone's having a problem with this. I remember people would actually drive to our house because they knew where you lived. And we're actually knocking on our door on a Saturday morning at 10 o'clock because they needed your help with something for insurance.
We had the one guy
that's
peeking in the windows trying to see if I was home
to
pay a bill.
Right. And so it was a lot on you. It was a lot on the family. You didn't have a lot of you had time and you could take time to help with the kids, but you didn't have the, I guess the flexibility in your schedule that you have now. So you kind of set your own schedule. You set your timeline, for things with work. And so you have a lot more flexibility with helping with things for the kids, you know, because both of them have, you know, multiple doctors that they see. So they have different doctor's appointments. And I was constantly having to take off of work to take them to their doctor's appointments at, you know, CHKD or whatever else they had going on or practices. We were juggling things. And now you have that flexibility that's kind of allowed you to be more involved in the kids' lives. And so you know more about what's going on with them other than just what I'm telling you. So you've been able to be more active father and more involved father because you are able to spend that extra time with us and you're not, you know, tied down to a job that is 8 to 5 every day and then on weekends and, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's really given us the freedom to have more family time.
Yeah.
And you coaching JJ's team in baseball and it's let me coach the things with Emma. Like I'm able to, you know, be their swim coach. I'm able to be her cheer coach, you know, for the school because you have that flexibility in your schedule to do things with JJ. So it's given us time to be more involved in our kids' lives in different ways.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say just like from my perspective, I'm definitely happier. And that happiness just comes with that freedom and flexibility. And like, I don't, I say it all the time, but I mean, you witness it. You're got a front row seat. Like, I don't, there's no stress right now. Like, I mean, there's the normal stress of growing a business, but it's my baby. Like, I like it. I enjoy it. And if it fails, it's on me. If it does good, it's on me. So I like that part of it. But just that overall, like, I would have never been able to, and for folks listening, I'm holding my cell phone up, to literally just put that away for an entire weekend and not look at it, because I had to kind of be on call. Mm-hmm. And now I do that. And now it allows me to not have to be peeking at it every mm-hmm. now and then, as much as I fuss at you for doing that. But I'm able to,
right.
that makes me more at peace and stuff like that. Our marriage, which, you know, you talk about like my presence and being involved with the kids, which that is like been my number one reason for doing all of this, but also our marriage, our relationship. We've never, fortunately, knock on wood, we've never really had much turmoil in our marriage, other than
right.
early on, just trying to get to know each other and, you know, each of our quirks and stuff like that. But as a married couple, it's been a very relatively strong marriage. I feel like the last two and a half years just has compound, like exponentially has been mm-hmm. better. And
I agree.
What, you know, I shared, let me ask you this. Did you read the blog article that I wrote about?
Not yet. Not yet.
Yep. So I talk again on this podcast and a lot of other stuff I do about like things I think help us have a strong marriage and a strong relationship 16 years in, and you know, it's just getting better year after year, in my opinion. What, from your perspective, can you say about like our relationship, some things maybe we do that helps keep it strong, help keeps us the main thing? Like, what are some things that you think from your perspective help with that?
Well, I think the thing is we don't have a problem telling each other when we think the other person is basically being an asshole, you know? For the most part, like, if you're doing something that I don't like, I have no problem telling you, or you have no problem telling me that I'm being crazy and I need to chill out. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the biggest piece of it, is we have that comfort level of communication where I can say that to you. You know that, like, I don't love you any less because of it,
right.
You know, and you don't love me any less or think any worse of me because I'm, you know, having a moment or whatever, or I, you know, disagree with something you say. So I think us being able to call each other out like that is a big piece of that. And just the fact that you and I are very similar in how we view things with the kids, you know, how we raise the kids. We don't have a lot of differing opinions on that. There are moments where we have a few disagreements on how we do things with the kids, but you and I think the same way when it comes to that. And what we want to do with the kids and where we want our life to go, you know, as we get older and when we retire, things that we want to do. But I think the communication piece is the biggest part of it, that we've been together so long that we understand each other.
Yeah.
And we're not afraid to call each other out.
Yeah. And we prioritize us.
Yes.
Like that is something that I remember early on, before we even had kids, us talking about, like, we started this thing, like you and I, and we're not gonna go down the same path that we see a lot of couples go down, which is, unfortunately, they have kids and that becomes 100% of their lives. Now,
right.
They're a big part, obviously the biggest right. part of our lives, but we know that it's a trap to make them 100% of our lives. We don't prioritize us at all. And then in 18 years, when they're out of the house, now we got to fall in love again. And we've been very intentional about not allowing that to happen. So we, you know, we do our date nights. We get away. We just went to Virginia Beach for the weekend. We, August, going to the Bahamas for a week.
Right.
Like, things like that, you and I have prioritized. And, like, how important do you think, from your perspective, is that?
Well, I think it's one of the most important things we can do is to show our kids that, yes, we love you. You're the best part of us, but your dad and I love being with each other too. and we want to spend that time with each other and have just that adult time where we can just enjoy being with each other and just relax on a beach and not have to, you know, worry about some of the things, you know, when it comes to the stress of, you know, life at home with kids and with everything else going on and just being able to relax and be with each other. But I think showing the kids that is going to make them look for that and whoever they end up marrying down the road. Yep. And we're setting them up for positive relationships with the people that they're going to be with.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more. And I think like the big thing is like, we still enjoy each other's company,
right?
Like we annoy each other, you know, on a weekly basis, but that's part of the charm,
right.
You know, and but like this past weekend, we get one night in a hotel, we go to a real nice dinner, we do some shopping, we go to a comedy show together, which sucked. But it was a good, like, we just got to be, and we do this frequently enough where it's a normal thing. It's not like a bonus day where we get to have each other. It's a regular thing, and we crave it when we don't have it. And I think that, but the biggest thing is modeling that for the kids. I all the time, it's top of mind. So you and I both have different love languages, right? So mine is physical touch and yours is like acts of service, right? And so we know that about each other. But for me, knowing that, I like to meet you with at your love language and vice versa. But I want our kids, we do that stuff in front of the kids. Like we are talking about our trips in front of the kids. We're flirting in front of the kids because I want JJ to see me as a model of how to treat a woman.
Right.
And I want Emma to see you as a model, how to treat a man and how to be treated and stuff like that. And I think that goes a long way as well. And fast forward, JJ's 9 and 10 years are both gone, most likely. And that's sad to think about, but you and I are going to still be having a ball. And that's, you know, that's exciting. And I think helps us a lot. So as far as like, looking into the future, what, you know, and we'll start wrapping this up here in a little bit, but what are you excited about as like I continue growing this business and it's getting pretty close to a point where it's, you know, close to being even more passive than it has been the last couple of years as we hire people and as things grow, but we're going to have a lot more opportunity to both from a financial and a time standpoint to do things and experience things. So what are some things you're excited about when it comes to that and the next 10 years with the kids?
I think being able to take them, you know, on trips that maybe we wouldn't have been able to take them on before. Maybe doing things, you know, purchasing a house on the Outer Banks. That's something we've been talking about, mm-hmm. I think, since we've been dating. That is a dream of ours to purchase a house down there and be able to give that to our kids and for them to have that as they grow up and as they, you know, have families of their own, them having that spot down there that we can create those memories with them. But just being able to enjoy life and give them those memories of, hey, we've been able to travel and we've been able to do things is really important.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I'm fired up about it. And you and I both are similar in the sense of we get excited always about having something on the calendar, right? So we book things way in advance to get excited about it. And we do some things on a whim as well, but we always like having the next thing. So like we just did spring break in Dominican Republic. Mm-hmm. As soon as we get home, we're thinking about, all right, what are we going to do? We're going to do a cruise. We're going to go to Disney. What are we going to do next year? And we're mapping those things out. And to have more freedom and more financial security to do those things at an even bigger level as we continue to grow excites me as well. And I'm happy to be on this journey with you because I know I'm not the easiest to deal with from a standpoint of just how my brain's always going, right? And you, just as I have had to learn you, mm-hmm. you've had to learn me.
Right.
And I think you alluded a little bit to it earlier, but we have learned to just show each other grace and we're not trying to change each other, right? We point out when we're being assholes, in real words, but we're not trying to change that,
no.
right? Like, my, my sometimes it can come off as just being aloof and have no clue what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
To you, it's annoying sometimes,
right?
But you're not trying to change it, you know, all the time. And your anxiety, you know, it's annoying sometimes, but sometimes I poke it and really try to get it to come up just to make a laugh, you know? So we, I think we work well with that. If you had, so, you know, obviously it's a lot of aspiring entrepreneurs listening to this, that some of them may have spouses that, you know, might be nervous about their spouse doing something similar than as I did. What advice would you give from a spouse's perspective? Being a spouse, that you're not involved with the business at all.
No.
You couldn't tell me, you could not tell me within 50 grand how much money we have in the bank. Like, you have no clue when it comes to the business. So having that and having that trust, what advice would you give? And you can talk to a wife or a husband that might have a significant other looking to make a big leap and take a big chance.
Well, I think from the entrepreneur standpoint, you have to be able to show your spouse backup plan, and you have to be able to show them financially that you can still support them and give them whatever it is that they feel that they need emotionally, but also financially, that part of their life is not going to be interrupted, especially if you have kids, because that was the biggest thing for me. I was mostly worried about the kids and making sure they still had everything that they need and wanted. But you've got to be able to lay it and not just tell them, like, you need to put it down on a piece of paper and you need to say, this is my plan, and you need to have A, B, C laid out for them and say, well, if A doesn't work, I've got B and C here. And so I think that's the biggest piece of it.
Yeah.
Is having that backup plan. And I just said, nope, I've decided today that I'm going to quit my job. And here's what we're going to do. That is.
It's not. Yeah.
New.
No. And when you say, when you say a backup plan, I want to be real clear. So the burn the ships mentality, that whole thing, you hear that said a lot with all in, no plan B. Plan B can be, you're resourceful enough. If you burn this ship, you can build another ship.
Right.
Right. There's a good song by, Kenny Chesney. It's called, I think, Boats, or it talks about building a better boat. Like, and he, in the, one of the lyrics in the song is, I'm going to build a better boat. Well, that's how I view it, right? I did burn the ships on that career, but I can build a new ship. And if building a new ship means this business that we're building, or we fall flat on our face and it fails, I can go build another career, right? And I'm confident in that. So articulating that to you with confidence in a way that you don't,
yes,
you know, it's not just me BSing, was very important.
Yeah, that's the biggest piece of it. You've got to be confident in what you're doing, what you're presenting to your spouse. But then the spouse also has to have a level of trust there, and know that no matter what, I knew you were going to make sure, no matter what, that we were going to be taken care of. Whatever you had to do, you were going to make sure that was done. But at that point, you and I had already created this family and this life, and I knew you were not going to do anything to jeopardize that. So there's got to be that level of trust and understanding, and faith in your husband that, or your wife, that they will make sure, and it will do whatever it takes to make sure that you're taken care of.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I, none of this is possible without you getting to that point. Right. So like the way I am, I probably would have done it anyway. And we would have had a very rocky, you know, but the fact that you knew that about me, but you also trusted my ability to figure things out, right, which is my superpower. I'm weak in a lot of areas, but I know how to figure things out, allowed us to take the gamble. And again, I got to mention Elena, because Elena did it with Bill too and had the same conversations. And it certainly,
she was a big piece.
Certainly helps.
Elena and I were a big piece of supporting each other, because without Elena and I both being on the same page and Elena and I supporting each other and having those conversations as the wives.
And still. Yeah.
And we still have them. Like, her and I still talk about things. But without her and I supporting each other, things would be very different also, you know.
Yep. And one thing we talked about, and we're going to do it. I want to do another podcast with you, Elena, and a couple bottles of wine. That could, yeah, we'll see. We'll see about that. But Katie, I love you. And I really, like, you know, I tell you this all the time, but like you motivate me, you inspire me. You're a phenomenal mother. Like you said earlier, I'm now more aware of what's going on with the kids and their doctors. I don't know anything that's going on. I am now more present and I'm able to be involved. You manage all of the most important things in our family, which a lot of that is managing me and managing my chaos. Like I create chaos. Not just in the house, I'll show up to your second grade class with Handy in the middle of a day and get those little nuts wide open and then walk out of there and say, peace out. I do that to you often. And so I create a lot of chaos in and around anything I'm involved with. And your ability to just be along for the ride, enjoy it, embrace it, support it. It allows me to be free with everything I do, my hobbies, I want to wrap this up, but that's another thing that you and I have prioritized is time alone, right? Like you have your girls' trips and your weekends away with all your girlfriends and your girls and your family and stuff. Y'all just went to Nashville? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have my guys' trips, my golf trips. You've never once, not only not said you can't go, you are always asking, like, when are y'all's next trip? Mm-hmm. What, y'all going golfing, something like that? And vice versa. We prioritize not just time together and with the family, but ourselves. And we support each other in that. And that's always been important. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that because that's not normal. I've got a lot of friends that can't go on trips and can't do things because they know they can't even ask, you know. And you and I very openly talk about we've got to prioritize our own selves as well, because before we came together, it was just us, right? So, but I love you. I thank you for braving this because I know this is not comfortable for you. Anybody that knows Katie that's following along or watching this knows that she's not comfortable with this. So I had to pull some teeth to make it happen. We just had our 16th anniversary, as I said. We were trying to record this to have it come out that weekend, but we had some technical issues and stuff like that. But hopefully this works out and we can get it aired. And you got anything else you want to leave the folks with? No? No. Well, I appreciate you coming on. And for those that are listening or watching, appreciate y'all's support for the show. We're going to try to start. This has been my first in-person interview since we started 2 years ago. I've done a few at that time, but they were recorded on my cell phone. And so we really don't have a proper setup. We just kind of set up at a little bar in my office to do this. But I'm going to try to do more of these in the coming future. I've got a few scheduled that we're going to do in person and really highlight some folks local to me that are doing big things, whether it's as a teacher and a wonderful wife, or as a, you know, a police officer or a real estate agent or an entrepreneur locally. We're going to try to start highlighting those folks. So appreciate y'all's support and following along. And that'll wrap up another episode of Burning the Ships. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Burning the Ships. I want to give a special thanks to our sponsor, 608B Capital, helping real estate investors secure fast, reliable funding to fuel their boldest moves. If you're ready to take your investing to the next level, visit 608bcapital.com to learn more. If you found value in today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast. Your feedback not only helps us improve, but it also helps us reach more people who are ready to burn the ships and commit fully to their goals. And don't forget to share the episode with someone who needs that extra push to take bold action. I'll leave you with this. Burning the ships isn't just about removing the option to retreat. It's about unlocking the courage to charge forward. No matter the odds, the past is behind you and the future is yours to conquer. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time on Burning the Ships.